Say, who's this guy MacVoody always talking about? Oh, I know. That's that guy. He plays strictly by nose. You know what that means? Yeah, he smells. Loose Wig 9, Side 1 is about to begin.
An evening with us. And if I may start the show by saying, we are going to discuss a subject very near and dear to our hearts. Are you girls ready? Knockers up! Knockers up! Knockers up! Ladies, get your knockers up! Hey!
So there is a very great difference between the Chinese idea of Tao as the informing principle of nature and the Judeo-Christian idea of God as nature's lord and master, because the Tao does not act as a boss. In the Chinese philosophy of nature, nature has no boss. There is no principle that forces things to behave the way they do. It is a completely democratic theory of nature.
Get past the people, get past the hitmen!
People that, go ahead and tell them. But I'm not going to have to answer to it. And they're just going to think, you know, what's this Time magazine telling us? But that, you couldn't care less about that either. You don't know the people that read you. Because, you know, I've never been in Time magazine, and yet this hall's filled twice. You know, and I've never been in Time magazine. I don't need Time magazine. And I don't think I'm a folk singer. You'll probably call me a folk singer. But, you know, the other people know better. Because the people that, you know, that buy my records listen to me know necessarily to be Time magazine. You know, the audience that subscribes to Time magazine, the audience of the people that want to know what's happening in the world week by week, the people that work during the day and can read it, it's small, right, and it's concise, and there's pictures in it. I mean, those kind of, you know, those a certain class of people, it's a class of people that take the magazine seriously. I mean, sure, I can read it. You know, I read it. I read it on the airplanes, but I don't take it seriously. If I want to find out anything, I'm not going to read Time magazine. I'm not going to read Newsweek. I'm not going to read any of these magazines. I mean, because they just got too much to lose by printing the truth. You know that.
What kind of truth are they using?
Anything, even on a worldwide basis. They just go off the stands in a day if they print really the truth.
What is really the truth?
Really the truth is just a plain picture.
Okay.
Of, you know, a plain picture of a tramp vomiting, man, into the sewer, you know, and next door to the picture, Mr. Rockefeller or, you know, Mr. C.W. Jones, you know, on the subway going to work. Any kind of picture. Just make some sort of collage of pictures, which they don't do. They don't do. There's no ideas in Time magazine. There's just these facts. Well, you know, which too are such, because even the article on what you're doing, the way it's going to come out, don't you see, it can't be a good article. Because the guy that's writing the article is sitting in a desk in New York. He's not even going out of his office. He's just going to get all these 15, reporters, and they're going to send him a quota.
Well,
he's going to put himself on. He's going to put all his readers on, and another week will be, have some space in the magazine. But that's all. It means nothing to anybody else. I'm not putting that down, because people have got to eat and live. Please be honest about it. Sure. I know more about what you do. You don't even have to ask me how or why or anything, just by looking. You'll never know about me, ever. I could tell you, I'm not a folk singer and explain to you why, but you wouldn't really understand. All you could do, you could nod your head.
You could be willing to try.
No, I couldn't even be willing to try because it would be, it's... You know, there's certain things which every word has its little letter and big letter.
Your friend had the right word, pigeonhole.
No, it's not pigeonhole. No. It's not the word at all. You know, every word has its little letter and big letter, like the word no.
Yeah.
You know, the word no, K-N-O-W.
Yeah.
Okay. You know the word no, capital K-N-O-W?
Yeah.
Like, each of us really knows nothing.
Yeah.
Right? But we all think we know things.
Yeah.
Right, but we know nothing.
I'm saying
if you're gonna die, you're gonna go off the earth. You're gonna be dead. I mean, it could be 20 years. It could be tomorrow. Anytime. So am I. I mean, it's gonna be gone. The world's gonna go on without us.
Right.
All right. Now you do your job in the face of that, and how seriously you take yourself. You decide for yourself. Okay. Now I'll decide for myself. Now, you're not gonna make me feel unhappy by anything you print about me or anything, or anything like that. I just can't. It couldn't. It couldn't offend me. And I'm sure, I couldn't offend you. So, all I can hope for you to do is, all your ideas in your own head, somehow, wherever they are.
Do you care about what you're saying?
How could I answer that if you got the nerve to ask me?
Well, then you have to...
I mean, you got a lot of nerve asking me a question like that. Do you ask the Beatles that?
I have to ask you that because you have the nerve question.
I'm not questioning you because I don't expect any answer from you.
So goodbye. Let me with either guy. Okay, I go on without words. You take the fall. That one was mine alone. Oh, why not take off?
Universe. He was loved in Africa, he was loved in Europe, he was loved in Japan, everywhere he went, not just because he smiled, he was loved because the sound of that horn was a pure spiritual essence, the sound of America and the freedom that it is supposed to offer.
The way he looked, his stage manner, the way he sang, all these things were very, very profound. And they had a profound effect on the American musical scene.
What is in my bed for something, something about those bodies? How did it end? Ain't got a friend, my only sin is in my skin.
Lewis is really the tradition. We haven't caught up to it yet. He created our colloquialism. Every musician that I know of worth in popular music or jazz music is stung by Lewis Armstrong.
kindly. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I should like to introduce a young man who many times you've listened to by way of his recordings, and likewise many times have you listened to him over the air. He's going to do a solo for us here, and I want you to get right on the beat and right in the groove with the one and only Cootie Williams. Let's give Cootie a nice, great big one, huh? That's it, Brother Cootie. I see you came with your cutlass and all, huh?
That's right, Ralph.
Well, Cootie, here's the microphone.
I thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and I thank you, Ralph Cooper, and I've also brought my piano player, Buddy Powell, and we're to play the West End Blues for you.
The West End Blues?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we're going to the other mic now.
All right, West okay.
Now we're on the west side of town.
Yeah.
Yeah, now you can go right from here.
Oh, all right.
So you can't get mixed up, you know. Can't get mixed up, yeah.
Say, Slim, who's this fella Mac Voodoo you're always talking about?
Oh, he's the only man in the world who plays strictly by nose.
What does he do?
He smells.
Menton's and the Uptown House are to our music the same as Mecca and that other place in Saudi Arabia where the Muslims go for pilgrimage. Well, these two places the Uptown House in Mittens to our music. That's what they were, because they were the main fountainheads of our music.
Vocalist Common McRae was also a regular at Mittens.
I think I met him in Mittens, which was a club in Harlem where bebop, if you pardon the expression, really started. It was owned by Teddy Hill, who was a band leader, not progressive by any means, but had a love for that kind of music. And he used to have all the guys come in and sit in and play, and that's where I met Diz.
Drummer Max Roach, who worked with Gillespie for 50 years, learned his craft in jam sessions and said that they had important educational value.
If we had been exposed to so-called European training, we never would have had this great music that we have today. So we had to invent our own systems at how to deal with improvisation and how to deal with the world of sound, organized sound, and begin to think about it on the spur of the moment. You have to have a lot of information to play the kind of things that we do. You see, white critics usually assume that we haven't developed. It's like blacks are ignorant, so they have to improve and say it's get better and better. That's absolutely out of the question.
I got back for my own. Now, baby, stop all that gabbing. We don't need no backstabbing. Gotta change my stuff. Take care of all of my good stuff. Woo! You know I'm gone. I got a bag of my own. Oh, oh! On my good wood, I don't back up. Take my tea, my favorite cup. Leave my groove, it's still out of sight. Got the proof, protect my love right. I'm 3 times 7, you know I'm gone.
Did you notice that one friend was anyway?
Did you talk to your friends?
I didn't know who they were then.
Well, your friends. Did you talk to your friends?
Yeah. There are one or two people who I believe I can talk to.
That's why they're your friends because you can talk to them?
I think a friend is a friend because...
Can you communicate with them?
To a certain extent. They can understand me more than anybody else.
Oh, well, yeah, that's why we see we're different. We come from two different worlds. You come from England, I come from the...
Yeah, it's true, but I mean, we're still human beings, so there's some sort of connection between us.
No, I'm just a guitar player. That's all.
Man, you're trying to knock me. When somebody comes into it, what's your attitude?
Oh, you just read those energies that were a couple of the first few days I was here.
Yeah,
those were my energies. You know that, right? You know that that was all lies and rubbish.
I
know that.
The first one, I didn't know that much. Why I came here, I don't know. I've been regaled with all this.
Are you going to the concert?
Yeah, I'm going to watch. This is what I came to see. I thought I'd like to work with you first. What is your attitude to life? And when you meet somebody, what is your attitude towards them?
I don't like them.
You don't?
No.
I come in here. What's your attitude towards me?
No, I have an attitude towards you at all. Why should I have an attitude towards you? I don't even know you.
No, but I mean, I'd have been asked you if you wanted to know me or didn't want to know me.
Why should I
want to
know you?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, I don't know, eh? Ask me another question. Just give me a reason why I should want to know you.
I might be worth knowing.
Why?
Huh?
Why? Tell me why. What good is it going to be for me to know you? Tell me. Give me one thing I want to gain.
Well, you might learn something from my attitude to life.
Well, what is your attitude to life?
Huh? I can't explain that in 2 minutes.
What? What are you asking me to explain in 2 minutes? That's all you're getting in 2 minutes. You're asking me to explain something in 2 minutes, too.
Well, you're the artist. You're supposed to be able to explain it in 2 minutes.
I am?
Yeah.
Hey, wow. What about you? Aren't you an artist?
Oh, no.
What are you?
No, I'm a science student.
Well, let's hear it again. What are you? What student?
A science student.
Now, what does that mean? Now, just what does that mean? What does that mean? What do you do? What's your purpose in the world?
What's my purpose?
Yeah.
What's my purpose?
How do you help, what do you do in the world?
I'm in the world for me, I guess. Well, like everybody else.
Just like me.
Yeah.
So we're just alike, aren't we?
I guess we don't come
from different worlds. No, we come from Russia.
You were wrong. I was right. All the time. No, but this
myself, and this is interesting. Now I know if I go to interview some groups, if I go to interview Alan and Smoke, I don't think they couldn't care less about me.
You know, there's gotta be some reason, doesn't there?
But it's nothing to do with me, because they don't want to know me before I go in.
Huh?
Well, before I go in, I don't know.
Can you write them up in a paper? That's not good. What is that?
No, I don't think of myself as a sir.
I'm a
person, you know.
Well, so what? There's a million, thousand, billion, there's so many persons outside.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's dedicate this number to Mac Booty.
Now, the Chinese would say, if you can't trust yourself, you can't trust anything. Because if you can't trust yourself, can you trust your mistrust of yourself? Is that well-founded? See? If you can't trust yourself, you are totally mixed up. You haven't a leg to stand on, you haven't a point of departure for anything. And in this respect, the Taoist philosophy and the Confucian philosophy are in agreement. In Confucius philosophy, the fundamental virtue of a human being is called Yan, spelled J-E-N for reasons best known to Chinese scholars. I don't know what they are, but it's pronounced Yan. And it's a character, Chinese character, that Confucius placed as the highest of all virtues, higher than righteousness, higher than benevolence, and it means approximately human-heartedness. Now, Confucius once said that goody-goodies are the thieves of virtue. Virtue in Chinese is de. We romanize it as T-E-H, de. And it means virtue not in the sense of moral propriety, but virtue in the sense of magic, as when we speak of the healing virtues of a certain plant. A man of true virtue or a human-hearted man. And the meaning of this is that one should, above all, trust human nature in the full recognition that it's both good and bad, that it's both loving and selfish. Now, let me give an illustration of the wisdom of this.
I still remember one story he told me about a young Lakota called High Horse, and what a hard time he had getting the girl he wanted. Watanya said the story happened just as he told it, and maybe it did. If it did not, it could have, just as well as not. I will tell that story now. High Horse's courting. You know, in the old days, it was not so very easy to get a girl when you wanted to be married. Sometimes it was hard work for a young man, and he had to stand a great deal. Say I am a young man, and I have seen a young girl who looks so beautiful to me that I feel all sick when I think about her. I cannot just go and tell her about it and then get married if she is willing. I have to be a very sneaky fellow to talk to her at all, and after I have managed to talk to her, that is only the beginning. Well, this young man I am telling about was called High Horse, and there was a girl in the village who looked so beautiful to him that he was just sick all over from thinking about her so much, and he was getting sicker all the time. The girl was very shy, and her parents thought a great deal of her because they were not young anymore, and this was the only child they had. They thought so much of her that they had made a rawhide bed for her to sleep in, and after they knew that High Horse was sneaking around after her, they took rawhide thongs and tied the girl in bed at night so that nobody could steal her when they were asleep. For they were not sure, but that their girl might really want to be stolen. Well, after High Horse had been sneaking around a good while and hiding and waiting for the girl and getting sicker all the time, he finally caught her alone and made her talk to him. Then he found out that she liked him maybe a little. Of course, this did not make him feel well. It made him sicker than ever. But now he felt as brave as a buffalo bull, and so he went right to her father and said he loved the girl so much that he would give two good horses for her, one of them young and the other one not so very old. But the old man just waved his hand, meaning for High Horse to go away and quit talking foolishness like that. Then High Horse went back to the old man and said he would give four horses for the girl, two of them young and the other two not hardly old at all. But the old man just waved his hand and would not say anything. So High Horse sneaked around until he could talk to the girl again, and he asked her to run away with him. He told her he thought he would just fall over and die if she did not. But she said she would not do that. She wanted to be bought like a fine woman. You see, she thought a great deal of herself, too. That made High Horse feel very sick, that he could not eat a bite, and he went around with his head hanging down as though he might just fall down and die any time. Red Deer was another young fellow, and he and High Horse were great friends, always doing things together. He said, "Cousin, I have a plan, and if you are man enough to do as I tell you, then everything will be all right. She will not run away with you. Her old man will not take four horses, and four horses are all you can get. You must steal her and run away with her. Then, after a while, you can come back, and the old man cannot do anything, because she will be your woman. Probably she wants you to steal her anyway." So this is what they did. They went away from the village alone, and Red Deer made High Horse strip naked. Then he painted High Horse solid white all over. And after that, he painted black stripes all over the white and put black rings around High Horse's eyes. Terrible. He looked so terrible that when Red Deer was through painting and took a good look at what he had done, he said it scared even him a little. So this is what they did. That night, late, they sneaked up to the girl's teepee and waited until it sounded inside as though the old man and the old woman and the girl were sound asleep. Then High Horse crawled under the teepee with a knife. He had to cut the rawhide thongs first, and then Red Deer, who was pulling up the stakes around that side of the teepee, was going to help drag the girl outside and gag her. After that, High Horse could put her across his pony in front of him and hurry out of there and be happy all the rest of his life. When High Horse had crawled inside, he felt so nervous that he could hear his heart drumming, and it seemed so loud he felt sure it would waken the old folks. But it did not, and after a while, he began cutting the thongs. Every time he cut one, it made a pop and nearly scared him to death. But he was getting along all right, and all the thongs were cut down as far as the girl's thighs, when he became so nervous that his knife slipped and struck the girl. She gave a big loud yell, then the old folks jumped up and yelled too. By this time, High Horse was outside, and he and Red Deer were running away like antelope. The old man and some other people chased the young men, but they got away in the dark, and nobody knew who it was. Well, if you ever wanted a beautiful girl, you will know how sick High Horse was now. It was very bad the way he felt, and it looked as though he would starve even if he did not drop over dead sometime. Red Deer kept thinking about this, and after a few days, he went to High Horse and said, "Cousin, take courage. I have another plan, and I am sure if you are man enough, we can steal her this time." And High Horse said, "I am man enough to do anything anybody can think up, if I can only get that girl." So when the night was getting old and everybody was sound asleep, they sneaked back to the girl's teepee. High Horse crawled in with his knife, as before, and Red Deer waited outside. High Horse crept up by the girl's bed and began to cut the rawhide thongs, but he must have made some noise, for suddenly the old woman awoke and said to her old man, "Old man, wake up, there is somebody in this teepee." But the old man was sleepy and didn't want to be bothered. He said, "Of course there is somebody in this teepee. Go to sleep and don't bother me." Then he snored some more. But High Horse was so scared by now that he lay very still and as flat to the ground as he could. Now, you see, he had not been sleeping very well for a long time because he was so sick about the girl. And while he was lying there waiting for the old woman to snore, he just forgot everything, even how beautiful the girl was. Red Deer, who was lying outside ready to do his part, wondered and wondered what had happened in there. But he did not dare call out to High Horse. After a while, the day began to break, and Red Deer had to leave with the two ponies he had staked there for his friend and girl, or somebody would see them. So he left. Now when it was getting light in the teepee, the girl awoke, and the first thing she saw was a terrible animal, all white with black stripes on it, lying asleep beside her bed. So she screamed, and then the old woman screamed, and the old man yelled. High Horse jumped up, scared almost to death, and he nearly knocked the teepee down getting out of there. People were coming, running from all over the village with guns and bows and axes, and everybody was yelling. By now, High Horse was running so fast that he hardly touched the ground at all, and he looked so terrible that the people fled from him and let him run. Some braves wanted to shoot at him, but the others said he might be some sacred being and it would bring bad trouble to kill him. High Horse made for the river that was near, and in among the brush he found a hollow tree and dived into it. That morning the people were ordered to break camp and move away from there. So they did, while High Horse was hiding in his hollow tree. Now Red Deer had been watching all this from his own teepee and trying to look as though he were as much surprised and scared as all the others. So when the camp moved, he sneaked back to where he had seen his friend disappear. When he was down there in the bush, he called, and High Horse answered, because he knew his friend's voice. They washed off the paint from High Horse and sat down on the riverbank to talk about their troubles. High Horse said he never would go back to the village as long as he lived, and he did not care what happened to him now. He said he was going to go on the warpath all by himself. Red Deer said, "No, Tashi, you are not going on the warpath alone, because I am going with you." So Red Deer got everything ready, and at night they started out on the warpath all alone.